This is Jaguars Thursday. Jaguars Thursday. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
Welcome into Jaguars Thursday. JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman. We'll get to Tony Baselli coming up a little later at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia tonight for Thursday Night Football. The Titans and the Jaguars coming up this Saturday, Christmas Eve. The game presented by SeaBest, America's seafood experts, bringing seafood to the table. With us tonight in studio, interim head coach Doug Marrone. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing well, JP. How you doing?
Doing great. I know this is a never an easy time, the transition from an old head coach to an interim situation here. But in general, how have the last few days gone for you here?
I think when you start from the beginning, like you said, it's not an easy transition at all. It's a very challenging transition. I think it's challenging, obviously, for many reasons that, you know, obviously Gus was released, Gus Bradley, and but we're all part of that. I mean, we're all at fault for that. And I think that, you know, we as assistant coaches understand that, and I think the players understand that. So it's very difficult to see someone go through that knowing that you were part of that reason. At the same time, you know, obviously we understand that, and, you know, we have a game to play this week. So, you know, players are resilient. They'll get themselves ready. They're professionals. And I was very proud of, you know, and Gus would have been proud of how the assistant coaches have handled it and the players have handled it. And I think that's a credit, you know, to the type of leadership that Gus had with this, with our coaches and the players, and the type of men, you know, that our players are.
What was it like, the process? You know, the game is completed in Houston, and then Gus is let go, and then what happened next for you?
Well, really, I found out, you know, kind of like everyone else found out, which is obviously was a difficult situation and one that's been obviously spoken about. After that, I had Dave Carwell, our GM, asked if we can meet. By then, you can kind of put two and two together, you know. But you never know. So I went and sat down with Dave. We were both of the understanding that we all failed. I thought that was very classy by Dave, and I expected that from him. You know, there was there's always a partnership between the head coach and a general manager. And then he said, you know, we'd like, you know, you to transition this over to be the interim head coach. So, you know, obviously I have the title offensive line coach, assistant head coach, and it's for that reason. So, you know, obviously I accepted that, and knowing that I can carry this thing through just like Coach Bradley would have liked it.
And for you personally, how difficult was it to actually have that offer? You know, knowing the relationship, I know you talked earlier this week about how Gus helped you in a transition that wasn't easy for you.
Well, it was extremely difficult because, you know, not only was Gus the head football coach and my boss, but he was also a good friend. And, you know, his family, you know, have been outstanding, especially when, you know, what I've gone through, and it's not about me. I came down here with a tough situation, having left Buffalo and really going through a difficult time, but not just me. I think, you know, we as coaches can handle it, but more so for my family, and Gus's family brought us in together as family. So for me, I understand that. And it's one of those things that, you know, when you do accept it, obviously, Gus and I still communicate. You know, I've talked to Gus and want to make sure he knows how much I care about him, as well as the coaches and the players and how they've reacted, and, you know, keeping him up to date. That, you know, he would be proud of the players, of really a lot of the character that he helped instill or brought out. I always said this about Gus: the one, you know, I learned so much from him. The one thing I learned is that he could bring out the best in a person's character. He really could. And I think that he would have been proud of the way everyone that worked for him is handling it right now.
Doug Marrone is with us on Jaguars Thursday. I was going to ask you about the players' reaction to that. I know you talked to a few guys individually before the first team meeting. I think the day before you had a chance to get around to a few guys. What was the reaction? How did they take to you the first day out there?
Well, obviously I know the players. Yeah. I don't know them as well as obviously, you know, with the linemen or even maybe the D-line because, you know, we work with them, you know, often or the offensive players. But I think we all just had heavy hearts. I really do. And I can't really speak for every individual player, how they felt about the situation. But obviously the situation was explained where we were leading, where we wanted to go forward, how we wanted to end this thing. So it was a very difficult transition. It's a challenging transition, but I thought, you know, I was very fortunate that I have, you know, that Gus has hired a lot of great assistant coaches and the players, and they were good. They understand the situation, but at the same time, players, they know they're resilient. They know their situation. They have to go out there and perform well. There's contracts. There's a lot of things that go into it. There's obviously a change coming forward for our organization, so they want to make sure that they have a good impression. They understand that part of the business, and football is a business.
It is, and at the end of the day, change is coming, and what that change is going to be, nobody knows yet, and I know that as part of this transition where you're the interim head coach, has there been conversations with Dave Shad Khan to where, look, am I going to have an opportunity at being a permanent coach? Is that something that you aspire to? Or is that something that, as a coach, you just say, look, you know, the chips will fall where they may, and we just have to coach them up for 2 weeks?
You know, just like I said in the press conference, you know you're going to get asked that question, and it's a very good question. For me, I felt it was my responsibility for an organization. It's my responsibility for the assistant coaches and for the players, and obviously for Gus, too, that, you know, if this situation happened, my focus was on them. So my focus never came to myself saying, hey, listen, how can I, you know, get myself in a position where, you know, maybe I can get this job, or am I going to have an opportunity at this job, or am I going to have an opportunity of another job? You know, I feel very comfortable having been a head coach in this league and having won our last year in Buffalo, but that it doesn't come across my mind of, you know, it's not about me. It's more about the assistant coaches and the players, and that's something that, you know, I had a long talk with Gus about and told him, I said, look, this is not about me by any means. This is about the assistant coaches, the players, being there for them, helping them through this difficult time so they can go out there and perform and we can do the best job we can for the organization.
Doug Marone with us on Jaguars Thursday, mentioning the assistant coaches. You know Nathaniel Hackett very well, of course. He's been with you a couple of stops in your past. You might know a little bit about him.
I know a little bit. That's like, you know, it's been tough. That transition's been tough, too. I was his boss for many years, and all of a sudden he's my boss, and you know, now I'm his boss again. So, and I wanted to make sure that he knew that.
That's how this business goes, right?
Yeah, you got to be careful now.
That's
you got to be careful.
On the other side, Todd Wash on the defensive side of the football. Those guys, though, have been integral in helping you get on track here this week, I'm sure, right?
Well, it is because, you know, from an offensive standpoint, schematically, I know exactly what's going on. You know, the defensive standpoint, I'm really in tune with what our defense is doing when we're in OTAs and preseason camp. Because, you know, obviously that we're competing against them. And then obviously with Mike Mallory with special teams, I'm not as involved as I've been before. And, you know, before – what?
That was good.
Cough.
I hit
like
the
cough
a pro, button. Man. He found a cough button.
Yeah. It's been a while since he's had his own radio show, I guess, Logs. He's back on the horse.
So with Mike, you know, with special teams, I have a background on that. But my my style – is to make sure I understand all three phases. My style is to make sure that when we put in game plans that all three phases are working as one and not three separate entities. So for me, it's been very difficult, you know, making sure I'm taking care of the assistant coaches, making sure I'm taking care of the players, trying to get as much film as I can in, working on, you know, all three parts of the game plan of how we want to play this game. So I have relied quite heavily on the coordinators this week to kind of catch me up to speed on exactly how we're going to go about getting a win this week.
one of the first questions, and I'm sure that you knew it was going to be coming, first time that you stepped up the podium, was going to be questions about Blake Bortles as the quarterback, and would he be the starting quarterback going forward for your football team? And you answered without any ambiguity. You said he is our quarterback.
Yeah, and I do it the same way again. I mean, absolutely. He's our starting quarterback. Next question.
Yeah, you didn't handle it that way at the press conference.
Oh, yes, I did. You know what? No, the press conference was more like, he's our starting quarterback. Next question. A little bit lower than that.
Right. There you have it. So that's the big question a lot of fans have about
this
offense.
And we understand that. And I just hope that people can appreciate what our jobs are or what our job is. And we can, you know, that we're making the best decision for what we feel is best for the organization. And without a doubt, that's what we feel is best for the organization. Again, I think there's a lot out there that people may not have talked about. You know, there's been three coordinators. There's been, you know, a lot of things gone on. I didn't do a great job last year. You know, he got hit, you know, 50 times. The year before that, he was hit 70 times. You know, there's a lot of great things about Blake Bortles that we need to keep coming out. And it's the age-old saying. And this one I truly believe. I know there's a lot of cliches out there in this game. But, you know, when you win, the quarterback gets too much of the credit. And when you lose, he gets too much of the blame. You know, and for us to be successful as an offense, you know, we've got to be able to help them more. And it starts up front. I mean, I say that. I've coached the line. You know, I've got to have – you know, I don't have – no, now it's on John Benton. But, you know, I have to do a better job. I think our receivers, you know, everyone around, you know, the quarterback has to do a better job, including Blake, which he's come out and said, you know, the things that he needs to improve on. So, you know, when you haven't won a lot of games, they're going to start coming after someone. And I think the first person is the quarterback.
Well, it's an easy target. It's a quarterback-driven league. And I think a lot of people recognize some of Blake Bortles' great qualities. I mean, he's been tough. He's been durable. He's been unflappable. Are there other strong traits that other people that, besides watching him, can identify with?
Oh, I think Jacksonville should be able to identify very well. I mean, you know, the people of Jacksonville in my short 2 years here, you know, are hardworking people. I mean, they got to get up and go to work every day. They got to handle the heat in the summertime and work out. You see people on, you know, construction crews and things like that. I think they would have a great appreciation if they were able to see the type of work that Blake Bortles puts in. He's in here extremely early. He's staying here late at night. He stays on the field and works extra. I think there's a great appreciation. And that's what I mean when people say, you know, Blake doesn't show up in here 5 minutes before the meeting, and as soon as the day's over, just leaves here. You know, you're talking about someone that is in this thing 110%, has worked, you know, and he was the one that we were, you know, I know I spent some time with him because if you talk about the players, and I'm not going to say one player feels more responsible than the other. We all feel responsible, but that's a heavy burden, you know, that Blake is carrying, and he has to understand that we were all part of that burden, which led us to this record.
Doug, we're going to come back and look forward. The Tennessee Titans are coming to town on Christmas Eve.
Yep.
You might have heard about that.
Yep. Well, week. Believe me. A lot of relatives in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that game coming up. Your relationship with Mike Mularkey, Dick LeBeau, and all the rest. This is Jaguars Thursday on the Jaguars Radio Network.
And just when it hit me, somebody turned around and started playing that fucking music. Hey, man, here I am, a man on your scene. I can give you what you want. You got to come home with me.
Hustling, 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 hustling. Where are you going?
Don't push me, because I'm close to the edge.
Come on, Doug.
I'm trying. Well,
more of a country
you know
music.
What I'm saying?
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. I don't know. This is from June on Jaguars.com. Doug Marrone mic'd up during off-season work.
If I knew that was going to happen, I wouldn't be on the show. Oh, well, if you were going to play that. I'm just trying to be honest.
Don't look at me, Joe Fortunato.
You did a pretty good job, I must
say.
Yeah,
it was really nice.
I mean, like, haven't we done enough of this around here? Huh?
How are you? How old are you now?
52.
Okay, he's 52. I'm 49. Kind of the same era of music. The crazy thing is, first time I ever heard that. I'll sing along with
him. I want Julius.
I don't know.
Mercedes is intimidation. Let's go. Guys should be on the run.
I can listen to this all night. It was just fantastic. Go back and watch it.
It's old school. I mean, it's just old school, and I appreciate all kinds of music. I really do. I grew up more, I actually grew up, my dad liked Glenn Miller. So I grew up in the big band era.
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, from there, I was more into, you know, rock and roll growing up. And then, you know, then rap and then disco. I mean, and so I guess our ages, we went through everything. Yeah, we really did. You know, then I met my wife from down south, and I started listening to country, and I was hooked.
There wasn't a whole lot of country playing in the Bronx.
No, not a lot. I didn't even think there was. It was just one. The only radio station we listened to was WPLJ. It was an outstanding radio station for rock and roll, and there was zero country music. Zero. But then when, you know, obviously my wife's from Nashville, so, you know, and she listened to country, and I think if you want to marry someone and you love them, you learn to like their music, especially when you're trying to court them.
I guess so.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So since the wife is from Nashville, is she a Titans fan?
That's a great question.
That is a great question. We have my wife's mom comes from a family of 15, and they have at least 4 to 6, you know, children in each one of those family. We have in the family, not myself or my wife, have about, I would say, anywhere between 70 and 95 season ticket holders for the Titans. Also, I would say that, you know, it's very simple. I know how I operate, and I told my wife this, that, and I said this before, that, you know, to me, this is the Christmas card game. You know, for those season ticket holders that aren't rooting for me, they're not getting any Christmas gifts, they're not getting any Christmas cards, and they're not invited to the house. For those that do support me and say, hey, we love the Titans, but we don't want to, you know, we're not rooting for them against, you know, Jacksonville because, you know, it's family.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to take care of them now. I promise you that. You know. So there is a lot of that going on right now, I can promise you.
Good approach.
A lot at stake.
Yeah. A lot at stake in as far as the family, you know, and the family get-togethers.
You mentioned earlier this week your relationship with Titans head coach Mike Mularkey, who's a former Jaguars head coach, of course. Where did that begin?
I think it began in Minnesota. Mike was in Minnesota. I went Plan B free agency from New Orleans to Minnesota. And, you know, I think like any team, and Jeff can relate to this, if you feel, you know, someone's a lot like you on that team, you kind of gravitate to them.
Well, I don't want to kind of put this out there because Plan B, you were a player. This is not when you were a coach.
No, I was a player.
He was a Plan B free agent, which was the only free agency at that time in the National Football League. And Mike was a Plan B type of player that was already with the Minnesota Vikings.
With Minnesota. So that's where we first met. And, you know, I wouldn't say we were, you know, great friends, which, you know, teammates is probably the best way to explain that. And then I was looking for a job. I had gotten done playing, and Mike had finished playing. And we were down at the Senior Bowl, and we just kind of got together. And, you know, here are two guys that are looking for jobs. Mike was working for 3M at the time. And, you know, you don't know. No one's really going to talk to you or do anything. And next thing I know, you know, Mike, hey, I think I have a chance here. And I'm thinking, well, gosh, I'm trying to get on here. And Mike obviously went on to be a quality control coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I had the great distinction of going to upstate New York and being the tight end coach for Cortland State Red Dragons, which I'm not putting them down, but obviously there's a big difference. And I've been trying to catch up to Mike, you know, for a long time. And, you know, it was interesting because
what did you get paid at Cortland State?
My first 2 years coaching, because I had saved money when I played, which I didn't make a lot of money, obviously. I saved that money. My first 2 years in coaching, I didn't get paid.
Didn't get paid at all.
No, I didn't get paid at all. So I went through my savings. So basically, my first paying job was Northeastern University, which dropped football, which was a 1AA school. So that was the first job that I had, and thank goodness I had gotten that job, because if I didn't, I might have had to get out of coaching. So that's what happened. But long story short, Mike really helped me. When I took over at Buffalo, Mike had been a former head coach at Buffalo. So Mike was one of the first calls that I made, you know, just to get a feel of the people that were around the building. He was extremely helpful. He was great to me. And then, you know, obviously when this situation came up, being the interim, if we weren't playing the Titans this week, Mike probably would have been one of the first phone calls because he had gone through this last year. So I have a great amount of respect for Mike, obviously as a football coach, but more as a person. He's a great husband and a great father. I think really he's done an outstanding job.
Let's come back and get into the nuts and bolts of this football game on Saturday here at Everbank Field. The Titans and the Jaguars coming up. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, interim head coach Doug Marrone. Jaguars Thursday, the Titans-Jaguars game presented by SeaBest, America's seafood experts, bringing seafood to the table. Exotic smash mouth coming to town. That's what Mike Mularkey calls his offense, described it before the season. And I guess it's kind of lived up to advanced billing. That's really what they are, right?
They are. I mean, they do an outstanding job, obviously, in their running game. They have two good backs. And you can see, and everyone that knows Mike's background, and Mike's there. He was with Pittsburgh. Russ Grimm, the offensive line coach, was with Pittsburgh. I think Terry Robiskie, I mean, he's been around a long time. He's an outstanding coach. He really is. And I think, you know, when you look at their, you know, they want to establish the run. And you have to do an excellent job defending it. They have two big backs. I said it before, not to say which tandem is better, but I remember when we were competing against the Steelers and they had Jerome Bettis and Deuce Staley back there. I remember being out there pregame and, you know, I see these two guys come out of, you know, Three River Stadium or Heinz Field, excuse me now. So they come out and they're jogging. I'm like, golly, look at that. That must be the defensive line, you know. And then all of a sudden they run around the bench. I'm like, no, that's Jerome Bettis and Deuce Staley. I go, oh, man, it's unbelievable. And I think, you know, one of the things, and I always remember that game, obviously it was a playoff game that we lost in overtime, but I remember our defense going out there and really doing an outstanding job for four quarters. I mean, really getting them, hitting them, tackling them. Then all of a sudden, you know, those three-yard gains start turning into five. You know, that people start to bounce off them. And I see a lot of that, you know, with Murray and Henry. I mean, the two backs that we have coming here now. I mean, you know, they're explosive. They're very hard to bring down. You have to watch your matchups. I think they do an excellent job of this. They'll go unbalanced. They'll shift, they'll motion, they'll do a lot of things to make sure that your adjustments and checks are proper. But even though when they do that, sometimes, you know, you can have a corner being supporting the edge, and that corner is going to have to make that tackle, and that's a big play to make, you know, on these type of backs. So, you know, I would agree with that. That's the style, and in the same sense, they're going to do that. When you commit to stopping the run, they're going to take their shots down the field and try to, you know, beat you over the top. So they're doing a very good job of mixing things up and establishing a run game, and it's not surprising where they are right now.
Well, and to have that is really the staple of their offense. Then you have Marcus Mariota, quarterback, who in his third year, I mean, what a tremendous job that he's been able to do. Second year. What is it, 25 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He's very careful with the football, over 62% completion. He's an efficient player.
He really is. I mean, obviously he's a player that understands he's taking care of the football first and foremost. I think he's also a player that has played he's a young player that continues to get better. He plays extremely well on the road, and I think that's very difficult for young quarterbacks, you know, when they go on the road. He has, like you said, a 62-point-something% completion, but down the middle of the field at all three levels, he's outstanding and one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, on the outside, it's not as good, but it's still very good, you know, for that type of quarterback. And, you know, he has some good weapons. Delanie Walker is a Pro Bowl tight end, which is, you know, very difficult. You know, how are you going to match him up? Are you going to put a corner on him? Are you going to put a safety on him? You know, he's someone that can beat you, especially in a red zone. So that's a great challenge.
Going on the other side of the ball, Dick LeBeau leads up a Titans defense. And Dick LeBeau, Hall of Famer as a player, could probably be in there solely as a coach with his 50 years experience as a player and a coach. And he's got some excellent players on the edge. But I think most importantly, watching them play at times, it's hard to figure out who's playing in the back end because they play so many different guys in their secondary.
That's correct. They do that, and that's a little bit different than when they were at Pittsburgh, obviously. They do have quite a few packages that they go in, where it's nickel, dime, different people that they want to match up. I would think I can't speak for why Dick does that, you know, as far as maybe it might be a matchup concern or what they want to do from coverage principles. But they do that, and they do mix it up, and they do disguise extremely well. And like I said before, I have a great amount of respect for him. He's the best defensive coordinator that I have gone against in breaking down someone's protection, getting you to think that the pressure's coming one way, and then all of a sudden on the snap of the ball, it's coming another way. So, you know, you're going to be tested as an offense to make sure that you know exactly where you need to go with the ball.
A couple of Pro Bowlers up front. Casey, Arakpo, finally getting his due. I mean, big-time names up front. They can stop the run. They can bring the pass rush, too.
Well, it's interesting. I think that, you know, when you go against, you know, as many times have I gone against Coach LeBeau, I think what you come to have an appreciation for, you know, I think, and Jeff and I were talking about this before the show, you know, it starts with the edges. You know, it really does. I mean, they do an excellent job of, you know, not letting you get the ball outside, you know, really pressing the edges and really forcing things into a player that I think has been, up until this year, has been an underrated player in this league, having gone against him last year in Casey. He's an outstanding player. You funnel things to the inside. The backers are very good, physical, downhill. And obviously they're good enough as far, you know, from a pass rushing standpoint of being exotic with their pressures to really make you think about how many times you want to throw the ball down the field.
Well, and we had mentioned Arakpo, Derek Morgan on the other side, yep. Former first-round pick, really hadn't found a niche or really been comfortable yet as an NFL player. And this year he's got 9 sacks. He's having a career year. And in Dick LeBeau's system, he seems to be thriving.
I believe, you know, and when you look at Coach LeBeau's past, most of those outside linebackers that he had, you know, had great years. And I don't think it comes across as, you know, the first year, 1 year wonders. I think it comes across as those players growing with this defense and growing into, you know, what's expected of them. I think that Morgan is someone that, you know, Brian's an excellent player, has extremely good strength. You know, he could beat you with power. Where I think Derek Morgan has a little bit more off the edge, a little bit more speed, and I see a player that's really developing, you know, a little bit more moves, a little bit more counter moves, you know, making it a little bit more difficult to defend against. So, you know, you see an older player, but a very good player, and Brian on the one side, and I'm sure he's probably helping. I would think, you know, Derek come along, and whoever's coaching out there, and those outside linebackers is doing a good job with those players.
Doug, it's great to see you. Good luck this weekend, and thanks for taking the time out tonight.
JP, Jeff, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Interim head coach Doug Marrone joining us on Jaguars Thursday. Still to come, Tony Boselli in Philadelphia. This is Jaguars Thursday on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. Johnstown Center in Jacksonville, where exceptional is affordable. JP Shattuck, Jeff Flagerman, Doug Marrone out of here. We appreciate his time tonight on a busy, short week.
Well, you know, the best part about Doug Marrone is that, you know, with an interim status, you know, the Los Angeles Rams, their head coach or interim head coach that they have right now has no experience, you know, with the position of being a head coach. And it's not an easy position for anybody to step in an interim role. But, you know, I think you appreciate when somebody has experience, and I think that Dave Caldwell and Shad Khan leaned on the fact that he's been there and done that. You know, it makes the transition easier because you're not asking him to do something he hasn't done before.
Right. Yeah.
And that helps. And, you know, and when you're going through a transition to where a head coach that has been, you know, relieved of his duties, who has been as well-liked as Gus Bradley, you know, you want to have somebody that can make the process as smooth as possible, and experience certainly plays a big part in it for his selection.
How much does last game's score against Tennessee and result and effort and play have to do with this game? Anything?
Well, it better. I mean, flat out, plain and simple, that was a butt-whooping. The Tennessee Titans laid on the Jaguars in Nashville.
We can go through the stats.
No, you don't even have to. I mean, you don't even have to go with stats because you can summarize it in this fashion. It was 27-0 at halftime, and that was probably closer than really than what the game was indicating.
Wasn't even that close. Yeah, right.
You know, defensively, they ran right over the top of the defense. Offensively, they could do nothing. And it was just a total lack of every category that you expect a football team to play at a high level with. And so I think that that helps. And I think that that will help this team gain focus. And look, if they don't have a focus, it could happen again. Because the Tennessee Titans are playing very good football. Look, I know they've only won, what was it, one in their last four, because, or excuse me, three out of their last four. But for them to be able to go to Kansas City and beat them at Kansas City in single-digit temperatures on the road is an impressive job.
No matter how it happened at the end, which was strange, but it worked out for them. And that's happened a few times this year. They should have lost the Bears game. There was a touchdown dropped at the end by Chicago. The Broncos game, they had to force a turnover to seal it there.
And the reality of it is that they are playing the type of football that they want to play.
Yeah.
Their quarterback, I think earlier in the year, came out of the gate and he was struggling a little bit. He has smoothed out. Their running game has taken over. The tackle, Conklin, who they drafted in the first round, eighth overall pick, I think that him and Taylor Lewan might be the best tackle combination in football right now. It would be hard to argue that there is anybody playing better than them. You might make the argument that there are players that are playing at their level. But they're running the football effectively. They've got two backs that can beat you at any time. They have a quarterback who is efficient with the football, who protects the football, and is still getting the touchdown throws that he needs. I mean, that's a great recipe for success, and give the Titans credit, and this is a big game for them. If they win this game, they have the Texans at home with an opportunity to clinch the division in Nashville.
Can't ask for much more than that.
No.
If you're the Tennessee Titans.
No, I mean, if you're a player, I mean, what more do you want?
Yeah.
As a player, you want to control your own destiny. Mm-hmm. And the Texans and the Titans both control their own destiny. And if the Titans win this week and the Texans win this week, I will be watching that game on January 1st between plays of the Colts game.
Right, yeah, sure.
You know, I'll try to set the DVR or something because that will be a fantastic game.
Now,
it might be a flex game.
Right, but now – the Texans could clinch. If the Texans win and the Jaguars beat the Titans, then
that's
it's
correct.
Over.
But,
now,
but
the
but
other
it,
way around,
but
then they play week
here's
17.
The thing. Both teams control their own destiny.
That's right.
You know, so if the Titans win out, they're the champs. Texans, they could get it with a little bit of help.
Now, if all heck breaks loose, the Indianapolis Colts are still hanging back. That's going to be a tough climb for them.
That's
they got to overtake both of those teams.
It's not going to happen. The Colts are done. Put a fork in them. They're not playing good football. I mean, they got a win last week, and who did they beat?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it was not
I don't
a great
remember
game.
Who it was, but it was
34-6 or
it
something.
It was
not even a game.
Was it the Jets? No, it wasn't the Jets. I can't remember who it was.
I'd have to look back.
I'd have to look it up. Well, you should know that.
Stand by. I'm looking it up. The Colts.
You got it?
Vikings. Who are not a good football team.
Well, I mean, they marched Adrian Peterson out last week.
Yeah.
And he wasn't ready to go. I don't know why that he came back with 1 week of practice. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But the Colts aren't in it.
They're done. And they had some key losses early, twice to the Texans and once to the Jaguars.
If you asked me which team is the best in the division, and it's this team in Tennessee.
Oh, it's easy. Yeah.
Yes.
It's easy. They've got it all right now.
They've got balance on offense. Two very good backs. They're playing good defense. I don't think they really have any true superstars, so to speak. I mean, Arakpo's a really good player. Jarrell Casey's a really good player. Are they superstars? No. On offense, DeMarco Murray, you'd have to classify him as a superstar just for second in the league in rushing. You know, I mean, if you can't put him in the superstar category, I don't know what else you would do.
Let's take a timeout. We'll come back and talk Jaguars. What can the Jags do offensively to get jump-started this week and the rest of the way? Also still to come, Tony Boselli in Philadelphia. The Jaguars and the Titans coming up. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome. Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman. Saturday's Titans-Jaguars game is presented by SeaBest, America's seafood experts, bringing seafood to the table. Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Lincoln Financial Field, the site for Thursday night football. The New York football Giants at 10-4 and the Philadelphia Eagles at 5-9. Kickoff at 8:25. On the call with Westwood One Radio, analyst Tony Vaselli is with us. What's up, Big Bo? Oh, Big Bo is not there yet. We'll get to Big Bo coming up. Well, we thought we had him ready.
Well, we got. We can.
Oh,
hear.
I'm here.
Oh, there
we can,
he is. We got you,
I mean,
Bo.
Put the headset on,
Let's go, man. What's up?
I'm sorry.
Are you still sick?
I gotta turn you guys up a little bit. I got too much stadium background. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can fix this here. Give me one second.
Oh, no.
No, don't do it.
Don't touch the buttons, Tony. Don't do it.
Let the pros handle it. Oh,
that is not going to go well.
This is not going well at all. We'll figure him out in a second.
All right, here we go.
Hey,
I'm back. I fixed it. I had
yeah,
a little bit
right.
of a crowd noise. I did. I'm a technical guy here.
Are you really? An engineer, too.
Oh, I got on the board and hit a couple buttons and made things happen.
No, what he did is he reached down in front of his headset, and there's a little box there with all his wires plugged in.
No.
He turned the dial to turn the volume up.
The problem was that they had the stadium sound already turned up in the headset, so I just turned around and asked Sam. I said, can you turn that off for me, please?
I got you. All right, so, Tony, this week, obviously, a lot of change with the Jaguars organization. Doug Marrone has taken over for interim coach. A lot of people are kind of curious that will things change in a week's time or 2 weeks' time? Is that even possible?
No. Big picture, no. Listen, I think Doug will put some nuances. He might change how they do practice a little bit, just schedule-wise and some nuances, but not overall. I mean, you just can't do that. You only have 2 weeks left, and I think it would be detrimental, not helpful, to change too many things in such a short period of time. You go out there, you coach them up and try to get them motivated and go out and play a football game.
For the offense this week, tough task. Certainly a defense that can play the run well. They have some questions in the back end, a bit of a shell game there. Guys coming in and out of the lineup. They have a rookie playing well in the back end, too. But a couple of Pro Bowlers up front, and they can really bring it on the defensive line. The front seven, really, Tony.
Oh, yeah. Jarrell Casey, Brian Arakpo. I mean, those two alone will put a little bit of fear and trepidation in you and make you think twice and give you a short night's sleep because of the way they can play both the run and the pass. And they're helped because of the style of football they play on the offense side of the ball. They run it. That offensive line has been outstanding. And a lot of that, is the style of football that Mike Mularkey wanted to play. And Russ Grimm, the offensive line coach, came in, did a great job. And they run the ball effectively. They control it. And they limit the time their defense is out there. So when the defense is out there, they're coming and they're going full speed.
All right, well, let's focus in on the defense here for a minute. And quick comment on Derek Morgan, who doesn't get a lot of fanfare. You know, he was a high pick. Tony and I both liked him because he gave great effort. He was never a great player. He is playing closer to being a very good player right now. He's got 9 sacks in the last 11 games. Tony, he's always had a great motor. But my question to you is, when you faced off with Dick LeBeau defenses, because as an offensive lineman, you've done that before, and Doug Marrone just a few minutes ago got done telling us about how Dick LeBeau is great at finding the weaknesses in your protection. What makes that so hard to block a Dick LeBeau defense?
Well, I remember back when Pittsburgh was in our division, we played, early when Dick LeBeau was the coordinator for the Steelers, and my head would be swimming. From the standpoint of they are going to give you so many different looks, and they're going to bring people from all over the place, and they're going to have a couple blitz nuances specific for your game. And so nothing you've seen on film, it's going to be a one-off situation. And so you got to be prepared for everything you've seen. And then also you really got to play by your rules, because you're going to get something that you might not be completely ready for because you haven't seen it yet. And a perfect example, I remember we played Pittsburgh 96 up there. We lost 20-0 nothing, and we were getting ready to score, and we had a scat protection, which means the back goes out, it's 5-man protection, And I had, you know, basically a dual read from linebacker to the defensive end because we didn't have a backstay in there. Well, I did that, but I forgot that my next read was also if a safety comes down, I got him as well. And Carnell Lake came down, and I never saw him, and he hit Mark Brunell, picked up the ball, and ran 90 yards for a touchdown. And
it was your fault.
That was your fault all these years that you never owned up to it?
No, I owned up to it that day, trust me, as I came out the field. And I remember I didn't even know because I never saw Carnell Lake. I didn't even know that it was my fault. I jogged off saying, what happened? And as I was met about 5 yards before I got to the sideline by Kevin Gilbright ripping me a new one, screaming at me. And I'm like, what? What happened?
Well, what happened next was then Mike Mazur ripped you on.
Well, yeah, no, then he showed me the picture and said, hey, dummy. And he maybe added a couple expletives after that and showed me the picture, and it was right there. And I just wasn't ready for it, never saw it, and just missed it. And that's what Dick LeBeau does. I mean, he is a great play caller on the defense side of the ball. He's very creative, and he's going to put a lot of stress on an offense.
Let's come back. More Titans-Jaguars talk with Lagerman and Buscelli. This is Jaguars Thursday on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Saturday's Titans-Jaguars game is presented by SeaBest, America's seafood experts, bringing seafood to the table. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli. For those in our flagship station, 1010XL in Jacksonville, another hour of Jaguars Thursday is coming up with Tony Buscelli in Philadelphia for Thursday Night Football. We'll look around the NFL as well. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, and Tony Buscelli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
Welcome in, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli is in Philadelphia tonight. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. The Titans and the Jaguars on Christmas Eve. Maybe Santa will be good to the Jags this week.
Well, I hope so. Boy, it's been a long time since Jacksonville has had a win here.
It's over a year.
Was it 12, December 13th last year to where there's been a win in Jacksonville? That's a long time. And I know that a lot of the players in the locker room talked about it this week. And, you know, obviously they took a lot of ownership in what had happened and brought that point up that, you know, look, we haven't given our fan base a reason to cheer, and that's the facts. And hopefully they can find a way to get it. Because, you know what, if you go an entire season without winning a game at your home stadium, that's not something to be proud of.
No, not at all. Tony Buscelli at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia this evening for Westwood One's coverage of Thursday Night Football. To that end, Tony, it's been a little while since it's been like that around here, right? I don't know if I certainly since I've been around here, I haven't remembered anything like that. You remember anything like that around here, Tony? A year since
a
win?
As far as?
Having a win, not having a win in a year's time here.
Never.
No. Not at home, no. I mean, and I'm with Jeff. I mean, I think just for the fan base would be great. I mean, it's not going to change anything over. It's not going to change anything. The overall picture, you know, you're 2-12, and I mean, 3's better than 2. But I think just psychologically, for everybody to get a win at home would be nice.
And what would be better than to ruin the party for Nashville?
Yes.
Okay. And then the following week to ruin potentially ruin the party for the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
You know, with them maybe having an opportunity to get in because Tennessee lost and maybe Houston lost. I think that would be awesome.
It's only awesome if you go do it.
I'd love to get a victory this week and have Houston lose as well and Indianapolis win. And that so next week Indy has to win and then go beat Indy there.
You would be the ultimate spoiler.
Just ruin everyone's year because, you know what, we've had a tough year. It's been no fun. And, you know, from, you know, not winning games to having, you know, the change at the head coach. And, I mean, it's just been a bad year. I mean, And so to ruin everyone else's year, you know, misery loves company, and I'd like to ruin everybody's year.
Let the Jaguars be the Scrooge of the holiday season.
I like
that. Why not? Blake Bortles.
That's all you can do.
Right, and there's no doubt about that. Doug Marrone has said Blake Bortles will be the quarterback. That's how it's going to be the last 2 weeks of this season. Now, Blake has said that he has been playing through a shoulder issue, and he mentioned Brett Favre earlier this week.
Well, I want to say this, JP, before you go any further. He presented it in the fashion that he was never using it as a crutch or an excuse.
That's true.
You know, and I just wanted to clarify that because a lot of people may get the impression that he was saying that with the intention of using it as such. And that was not the case.
No, no, no. But he mentioned Brett Favre. He had seen, a video on Favre saying that playing hurt is good, but only if you can play well when you're playing with injury pain or whatever.
Brett played hurt and eventually got a problem from playing hurt because he was taking pain pills. And he eventually worked his way through that and ended up being fine and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that is a fact. If you're going to play any position in the National Football League, everybody plays hurt. That's just the way it is.
Certainly this time of year, too.
And watching the game, you know, because watched some football on television recently, and even from the booth, and Tony, you would probably agree with this, it almost sanitizes the game a little bit to where you don't fully understand how violent it is. And I go back to, it was 1999. It was my first year to where I was not playing. And I remember walking down to the sideline at the conclusion of each game. You know, I was doing the Jaguars television stuff at that time. Wasn't doing the radio broadcast. So I'd go down to the field before the game was over and watch, you know, just the last 5 minutes of the play. And typically the last 5 minutes of a game are some of the times the most intense parts of the game. And the violence in which, you know, you saw, you were just like, oh, my God, I can't believe I used to do that. And so this time of year, if you could just spend, and for the fans, I mean, I know the pregame, people get access to the field, and that's cool and fine and dandy, but to be able to experience an NFL game from the field to where you can hear, feel, and see the violence of the game, you would understand where there is no player in the league right now that is completely 100% healthy. Not one.
That's throughout the league, Tony. Yeah, that's how it goes.
No, it's part of it. I mean, it's if you don't learn how to play through pain, you can't play in the NFL. And listen, I tell my boys and my coach, even in high school football, I tell them, I said, if you want to play this game, you have to learn the difference between being hurt and being injured. You play through being hurt. If you're injured, then you go sit on the sidelines and go get better. Injury is when you are you're going to significantly hurt yourself worse down the road, or you can no longer perform your job. But being hurt is part of playing, and you have to learn to do that to play football and to play successfully, especially at the NFL level.
Asked Doug Marrone today in the press conference about Kelvin Beachum's year. He's playing through some pain in that knee injury, coming back from the knee surgery last year, I should say. He's playing hurt.
He's hurt.
But he's playing.
Well, and, you know, look, he's not going to be fine until he gets a full offseason to recoup. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, we've seen it in his performance, you know, to where, you know, he does pretty good in his pass protection, and he's good when he's got kind of a player that doesn't play the game with power, more of a dancing-type pass rusher. He's got great feet. He can handle that. Finesse-type player. When he's got to deal with a player that has power, he struggles because he's having a hard time anchoring with that knee. You know, and I don't know exactly what it is. I could probably have an educated guess. You know, having gone through an ACL, a lot of times with an ACL reconstruction, Tony could probably echo these same thoughts, is that when you have an ACL reconstruction, when they do it, a lot of times they're using the middle third of your patellar tendon for your ACL replacement. And when they do that, you have what can be very severe tendonitis of the patellar tendon. And sometimes it dissipates, and other times it just does not because it never gets a break. It's during the regular season. And I have a feeling that might be what he's dealing with. I mean, from watching him, Tony,
if I had to say that it probably one thing, I would say that it probably that and probably getting some swelling on his knee.
Yeah, I bet anything it was that, Jeff. You had an ACL. I did, too. And I remember coming back from my ACL. Our bye week was week 9, the first 8 weeks. I had severe tendonitis, and I'll never forget the week 8, we're playing the Dallas Cowboys on that old turf in the stadium there in Irving, Texas. And I could barely do a body weight squat before the game because my tendonitis was flared up so bad. And I remember just telling myself, just get through this one, and I get a week off.
Well, the
and
other thing is, you were telling yourself is just get me to the locker room before the game so I can see Doc.
Well, the Toradol helped. No doubt about that. The Toradol helped a lot. And so I feel for Kelvin. I mean, it's real. It does change the way you play, and it makes it more difficult when you're playing power guys.
And what we're talking about, go see the Doc. I mean, the NFL has become very stringent on what players can and cannot take. During the regular season, before the game, you know, and one medicine that was widely used around the league for, you know, for many years was Toradol. And it was essentially, an injectable anti-inflammatory. And they found that there are some current concerns about the usage of it with the players. And I think it relates to concussions in some way. I'm not a doctor. I only play one on TV. So, you know, that's something that the players don't have now, and it's hard. It makes it even harder. So, you know, when you talk about players that are playing hurt, you know, I think the former players, me, Tony, we probably have even greater respect for the ones that are fighting through what they're doing it because they're having to fight through it without some of the tools that we got to be able to use.
Right.
You know,
sure.
Medically.
Yeah. Times change. Speaking of a position where a player is playing hurt to a position of injury, the Jags are on their 6th left guard of the season. Tyler Shatley will likely play there this week. Have you seen this much turnover in one position in 1 year?
Tony, I'll let you start with that because I got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have not. Not when you're getting to your 5th or 6th guy. I mean, it has just been a revolving door at the left guard position. And it looks like it's going to be Shatley this week. And I wouldn't be surprised if Buenco gets some reps there as well. I'd like to see Buenco get in there. But it makes it tough, especially at the offensive line position, because you want some continuity with 5 guys playing together, and they just have not had that because of all the injuries at the left side of that offensive line.
Yeah, and see, I kind of get tired of hearing, okay, they're on their 6th guard. You know? So what?
Yeah, that's what Doug Marrone said today in the press conference. Nobody cares.
No, I agree with that. But it's, and for me, it's not about nobody cares.
Right. You gotta go play.
For me, it is, look, the difference between the second
and
third and fourth and fifth guard, how much difference is it really? Okay? It's not that much. And Tyler Shatley, are we really considering Tyler Shatley a 6th guard? Does that need to be a storyline?
No.
Tyler Shatley,
better,
you could have said that he was the backup guard to begin with. You know, so look.
That doesn't sound as good, though.
I know it doesn't, but you know what? I'm
getting
tired.
Doesn't go with a storyline, Jeff.
Doesn't sound as good, but I'm getting tired of hearing it. You know, because to me, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, look, Tyler Shatley could have been the backup guard to start the season out if he had taken reps at guard.
Yeah.
You know? Let's go.
But I think it's more from a continuity standpoint, Jeff.
Well,
and
Shatley
I think you
played
do agree
week.
With that.
That's continuity, right? Well, Shatley finished
he
the game.
He finished the game, I guess.
You know, he's playing this week. That's continuity.
You're right.
Yeah, that's good. You get a quarter and a half continuity. That's
no,
that's,
he got about two quarters and played.
Okay, two.
Halfway,
yeah, all right.
So 2.5.
Well, Wellesley went in there for a little bit. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and that was a train wreck.
Well, that didn't go well.
Collarbone, right?
Josh Wells is not a guard.
No.
He's not a guard. I mean, he shouldn't have been playing guard. He's not a guard. He's a tackle. You know, but I understand what they were trying to do. You know, they're thinking Clowney can line up there. You know, the length of Josh Wells can match the length of Jadeveon Clowney. And in my opinion, that was a bad opinion.
Guys, let's come back and flip it over and talk about the Jaguars' defense. What can they do against the exotic smash-mouth look
there
of the Tennessee Titans?
I knew that was coming. It was coming.
He already
Mike
used
Malarkey
it a couple
company
times.
Coming to town on Christmas Eve. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Flagerman, Tony Baselli. Check out Jack Hanania's Audi Jacksonville on Blanding. You can lease a beautiful new A3 from just $229 a month. Head over today for details. Tony Baselli's at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia for Thursday Night Football. We'll get to some Thursday Night talk coming up here in a little while. The Giants and the Eagles this evening in the NFC East. And we'll pick some games around the league and see where everybody fell last week.
We'll get to that
coming up. So
I can feel a gloat coming up.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, Logs. We'll see what happened last week. We'll see how Tony did, too. We'll see. We will. The Jaguars' defense. Exotic smash mouth. We know about the Titans. They run the ball. Murray and the Heisman Trophy winner, Henry, and tight ends galore. Delanie Walker and Mariota is playing poised football right now. Defensively, this seems like another game where Scuda might get a lot more of the reps with the kind of a bigger package in there for Tennessee. Do you,
well,
do you feel that way?
Look, I don't know about
probably
that.
The reasoning behind that, right?
You know, it's just
if they're sticking to that reasoning.
You know, I don't know. I mean, if you're coming down the stretch, do you consider, you know, like you would in most years, which I'm not saying it's a throwaway two games, but it's a games. These are two games that you're clearly, as a general manager, you're looking ahead. And so, you know, if you're Dave Caldwell, would you like to see Doug Marrone play Scuda, or would you like to see him play Miles Jack? You know, and look, right. I don't know if they've had a conversation about it at all. In fact, the conversation that, you know, Dave Caldwell said earlier in the week, he said he's never dictated that any player has to play or play time. You know, but I would have to think that part of this equation going forward is that, look, you know, we're 2-12. Let's go ahead and play some guys that we might get a look at. So maybe the Miles Jack does play more. I hope he does. I want to see more.
Yeah, I think everybody does. Right, Tony?
Yeah, but I agree with you, JP. I think you're going to see more Dan Scuda because, I mean, anytime a team goes to heavy personnel in that 13 package with three tight ends, that's when Dan Scuda goes in. And so I expect to see at least him half the time out there because they're still trying to win a game. And right now they feel like because of the length of Dan Scuda and his ability to set the edge, he's more of a true Otto or Sam linebacker than Miles Jack. Miles Jack is a middle linebacker. That's what he is. And so I think that's I think you'll probably see what we've seen all year.
What do you think of this idea? Obviously, Paul Posluszny is still playing at a high level at the middle linebacker position, but a year, 2 years down the road, if you had to move him to the strong side in the situation Jack at mid.
You're not going to do
that. No, you wouldn't do
that. You're not going to move Paul Posluszny to the strong side. That's not
his game.
Yeah, it's not his game, and you don't take a player who is in double-digit years of service, 10 years, in the National Football League and move him.
Got it. Okay.
The only thing
if you're going to – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
The only thing that you would do is you let him go somewhere else to play Mike linebacker again.
Okay.
But you would move him.
I was
going
to say the same thing. Yeah, you know. I agree with Jeff.
Okay.
If you're going to do that, JP, you let Paul Posluszny go. As an organization – you say, we want Miles Jack out there. You go to Paul Posluszny early in the process and say, hey, listen, we're going this direction. It has nothing to do with play. You know, let's find you another place to go, another team to play for. Now, I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm not even saying that's the right thing because Paul Posluszny's playing at a high level. He's playing great middle linebacker. Why would you get rid of a guy who's playing so well?
Just bringing up the idea of in the future what would happen if the skills diminish
a
little bit.
We don't know what – the future is.
That's very true,
you
too.
Know, I mean, the only future that we're talking about here is the next 2 weeks. And
yeah, because Jeff's exactly right. What if you go? What if the new head coach comes in and you play more of a traditional 4-3?
What if you play 3-4?
Yeah.
Or you play a 3-4, it changes everything.
Mm. So the only future that you can really talk about is the next two games. And I think in the next two games, I mean, I would like to see Miles Jack play more. But, you know, here's the thing. We're not privy to the practices. We're not privy to the meetings. We're not privy to the what, you know, Miles Jack is grading out at, to what Dan Scuda is grading out at. I can tell you that from my eyes, I see a player that can make way more plays on the field in Miles Jack than Dan Scuda. Just physically, he has more ability.
You know, can Dan Scuda maybe set the edge a little bit better? Yeah. Is that at a premium to where it should take away plays from Miles Jack? My opinion, no. You know, Miles Jack sets the edge just fine from what I've seen. You know, let him rock, man. Let's see him. Let's see him go.
Be interesting to see what happens with that in the next week or two here. What other guys on the defensive side you want to see more of down the stretch? Maybe some, maybe Sheldon
you
Day
know
up
see
front?
More of, Tony, you know what I'm going to see more of? I want to see more of Jalen Ramsey. Because well, I can't get enough of
it. It's hard not to watch that.
Yes.
Now, this isn't going to be the game that you're going to see
Jalen. It might be.
Well, from the standpoint of what I was going to say, he's going to play, and he's very good. I think he'll do a better job. He did not have one of his best games like anyone else did that first Tennessee game, but I think he's the perfect corner in this type of game because he's so physical and he's such a good tackler.
But that's
not what we enjoy watching.
No.
We like watching him out
there
one-on-one.
Well, speak for yourself. I like it.
Yeah, we want to see the one-on-one matchup down the field.
I want to see Jalen Ramsey make a form tackle on DeMarco Murray and stop him in his tracks, pick him up, and drive him down to the ground.
You didn't say Derrick Henry.
Well, I'm not saying I wouldn't enjoy that,
because
Jeff.
Because it wouldn't happen with Derrick Henry.
I know, that's what I'm saying, right. Yeah.
But what we like watching is the one-on-one matchups. That's the fun part.
Yes.
That's the fun part. To answer your question, JP, I'd like to – I mean, I don't know if there's one guy. I mean, we already talked about the one guy because I'm with Jeff. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would just run Miles Jack out there and let him play the whole game.
Yep.
I mean, that's what I would like to see. So that's the only – I mean, there's not one other guy I'm dying to see on defense. I'd like to see more one-on-one pass rush opportunities with Dante Fowler out there and see if he can get better at it.
From a two-point
stance.
We've
seen that this year. So there's not one guy. I don't think – outside of Miles Jack, is there anyone that's really been held back from not playing – as much as maybe we would like?
No. None.
No, not really. No.
No, I mean,
How close is Dante to getting there? To being to having it? Not close.
I don't think he's very close at all as a pass rusher.
He's not close, but here's the thing. Even though he's not close, he's so physically gifted, he could be there in an instant. You know what I mean? It's not like that, you know, he's one of these players that needs to work on technique and it's going to slowly come. You know, I think he's one of those type of players that if he finally figures out what his attributes are of strength and to utilize them and to start with them and then to just react after that, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And he would make a jump from, you know, if you put it on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, Tony, what is he playing right now, 3?
You know, it's a pass rusher, yes.
It's a pass rusher, you know, 2-3. You know, but his effort has, for the most part, this past week it was down a little bit. He had the injury and all that kind of stuff. Wasn't great. But his effort has been, you know, 8-9-10, somewhere up in there. But, I mean, he could go from a pass rusher jump if he just figures out, use your speed, be an athlete, get a little shake, play with a little power, mix it up. He could go from a 2-3 to a 6-7-8, you know, in the blink of an eye. That's how talented he is.
Jeff, I mean, look at last year. Vic Beasley in Atlanta was considered a bust.
Oh, he was terrible. Right. Wouldn't you agree? Watching him on film, he looked terrible.
Oh, he wasn't very good, but he was a rookie, but he wasn't. This year, I think he has 11.5 sacks.
Yeah, he does.
That's how fast it can change.
Doesn't take much to figure it out.
No, he's – look.
Not when you're athletic.
Right.
When you got the tool belt, okay, it's easy to fix something, okay? It's the handyman that has a belt and there's not a lot of tools hanging off of it that struggles to fix something in your house. Okay, Dante can fix something in his house because he's got all the tools hanging on that belt, and it's a custom belt because he's got some tools that most guys don't even have an idea that they could carry one like that. That's how good he is physically.
Wow, what a reference here, Logs.
I'm just trying to help you out. I know you grow up in a, you know, Alabama background, trying to help you understand things a little bit. I think that kind of simplifies it for you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. That's
Roll
real,
Tide.
Real nice of
Roll
you.
Tide. By the way, Tony, okay, last night it's a television show, Jaguars Live, okay?
Yeah, you might have heard of it.
Yep.
And
on Channel 4.
Yeah.
Guess who the four-wheel drive segment was with, and guess what one of the topics was? Carson Tinker. Okay.
Oh, Roll Tide.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like.
It wasn't my idea.
It was like point number one, two, and three.
I made a point to not bring it up. He was like, let's talk about Alabama. Okay. Fine.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Okay.
I didn't know we were the home station for the in Jacksonville for the Crimson Tide.
Clearly we are.
Yeah. Clearly. That's okay. Let's finish this pass rush segment, shall we? Unique Ngakoue still a sack away from the franchise rookie record for sacks. Tony Brackens has the record there. And you know what? He had the play, the strip sack, the weird bounce against the Vikings.
Two games ago.
Didn't count as a sack.
And he was the best pass rusher for the Jaguars last week. And he got close a couple times. And
he's mic'd up on Jaguars.com.
Tony, would you agree? He was the most effective pass rusher last week against a team that you should have been able to get more pressure against.
Yes. I think Yannick has had a good rookie year.
And he's getting better.
I think so. I mean, I like him. And I like his arrow's pointing up. And I think he's only going to get better. And he's going to be a good player. He's getting pressure. He's getting there. You talked about he had some really nice rushes last week against Houston. Just was just short, just a step away from getting there and getting the sack. And it'll be tough this week, I think, only because he's playing against a good left tackle and Taylor Lewan, and it's a team that runs the ball a lot, and you got a mobile quarterback. That's not a great combination for a pass rusher. But I think, Jeff, he's also improved in his run defense. They're playing against the run. He's still not great at it, but you can see good effort, and I think he's improving in it.
Absolutely.
Guys, let's come back and talk a little Thursday night football. Tony Buscelli in Philadelphia tonight. We'll pick games in Week 16. We'll see where everybody stands for the season as well. That's what we call a tease.
Do we got a graphic for it and everything?
Oh, we do. Okay. We'll get to that on Jaguars.com as well. That's
those
all.
Those graphics really work
It'll
good on
radio.
It'll
be a ridiculous graphic, yeah. too.
We really work good on radio. And here's the question that I have. We still got the footnote, I'm sure, Tony.
JP.
You know, we still probably got the footnote, you know, that says,
he picked after
Tony's
week four.
Beating JP, but he didn't pick weeks, you know, one through five.
Whatever. We'll figure it out after this. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. The Jaguars and the Titans coming up Saturday at Everbank Field. Christmas Eve football.
Man, I'm already in the Christmas move. Christmas mood.
Will you finish chewing?
It's not the best part of Christmas, all the sweets and desserts that people
What
just,
are you,
you know,
eating?
Yeah. What is it called again?
Baklava.
It's like a...
Oh, I love baklava. Oh. Who made baklava?
John Tony. Shadrick, who was in town, brought baklava.
JP's dad hooked a brother up.
Oh, good baklava. You can't beat that.
I'll send you a photo, Tony, just to tease you. How about that? We'll work on that.
Can you save me a piece?
I might not make it to Saturday. I got news for you.
I don't believe it's going to make
on.
It.
Come on.
I don't believe it's going to make it to 8:05.
Hide one piece till Saturday.
After I just had the first piece, Tony, I can honestly tell you it's probably not going to make it to 8:05.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. I don't blame you.
Yep. So the Thursday night football game tonight, Tony, you're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Eagles at 5-9 welcome the New York Football Giants at 10-4. Thursday night football, who you got tonight, Tony? And what do you see in this ball game with Eli and the Giants?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The Giants' offense isn't very good. Now, they got – you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is a great player, but you look at some of the numbers and you watch them. They don't run the ball at all. They're not very good up front as an offensive line, and they don't score a lot of points. They're only averaging 19.4 points a game. It's one of the worst in the NFL. The thing that is saving them is that defense that they spent $200 million on in the offseason. You know, third-rated scoring defense, and they are really good. They don't have, you know, Olivia Vernon and is probably their – you know, and your favorite player, Jeff, the old Jets nose guard, Snacks.
Oh, he's a good player.
Harrison. Yeah,
Damon Harrison.
Damon Harrison, his nickname Snacks.
He's a great player.
He's really good inside. So they're good up front, and they got a good back half. So defensively is what is carrying this Giants team right now, because offensively they really struggle. And the big part is they just can't run the ball, and that offensive line's not very good. And the Eagles are an interesting team. They play a lot of close games. They've lost six games by seven or less. Last possession games, they just can't get over the hump. And they, you know, all the hoopla about Carson Wentz early, you know, they start off 3-1 and we're playing really good. And Carson Wentz is starting to look a little bit more like a rookie at times, but you watch him on tape, and boy, he's going to be good. He is big and strong. And when he's not confused, which he gets confused back there, like a lot of rookies, that his right arm works, and that ball comes out, and it's pretty impressive. So it's going to be a fun game. And the Eagles get Lane Johnson back after his 10-game PED suspension, and so they'll have their starting offensive line back from the first from the start of the season when they were playing well. And I think it's going to be a great matchup. It's really going to be a fun game to watch tonight.
If you try to figure out Carson Wentz, all you got to do, you know, you try to figure, well, why is he now struggling when he started out so hot? His playbook for the Bison might have been a couple pages, whereas the NFL playbook is certainly multiple, couple hundred pages. And on top of that, there's another book that he has to understand, which is NFL defenses. The book, again, that he had with the Bison was probably about 3-4 pages thick. Whereas the playbook in the NFL, there might be 12 of them sitting on the shelf, okay? And every one of them has something different. And that's a steep learning curve for a young passer. And you knew that it was going to happen at some point. But here's the crazy thing. Not to kind of jump away from the Eagles, we thought that was going to happen with Dak Prescott. But there's a difference. Cowboys run the football and run it every game.
Yes.
And the Philadelphia Eagles... they don't run the football like the Cowboys.
No, they don't. And early when they were winning, so in the five victories that the Eagles have, and they're on a five-game losing streak right now, their defense gives up just over 10 points a game in those five victories. In the nine losses, they've given up over 27 points a game. And so they were winning games early because that defense was just dominant. And they've sprung some leaks in the back half. They're not playing great in the secondary. And because of that they give up big plays. They've given up, I think, the third most big pass plays over 20 yards in the NFL with 52 of them. And so they got some issues on the back half of their defense. And so that's the issue for the Eagles. So, you know, and we all know this. In the NFL, the quarterback gets all the credit and all the blame. But it's not always that easy. You know, a lot of it is on the quarterbacks. And when you have a young one, you got to be really good around them. And if you're giving up a lot of points, it puts a lot of extra pressure on that quarterback. And if you're not running the ball great, it even puts more pressure on them. And they don't have a lot of weapons outside. Yeah. You know, Jordan Matthews is their best receiver, and he's okay. We're hoping Nelson Aguilar, their second-round pick, would be a guy who would turn into that number one receiver, and he's had a really bad year. So they don't have a lot of weapons, and so it puts even more pressure on that on the quarterback.
All right, guys, I'm going to read you some stats just to start something here, see if this sounds familiar. 58% passing, 3,200 yards, 24 touchdowns, 18 interceptions for a third-year quarterback. Who is it?
Third-year quarterback?
Yeah. Not this season, but in a season.
Eli Manning.
That is Eli Manning's numbers in his third season. Pretty darn close to what Blake Bortles has done.
I mean, Eli Manning
right?
has been throwing picks throughout his career. I mean, you could probably go to year four and year five, and they're probably similar numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, actually, it was more the next year, 20.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's my point. I mean, Eli Manning's thrown a ton of picks in his career.
Right. Now, he had a lot of help around him those years. A running game, Tiki Barber was there. Well, I mean, he had a defense, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with you got to start with the defense with him. I mean, and that's where you probably got to start this year with him as well. The defense is playing well in New York.
Hey, let's get to it, guys.
Can I say one thing about that?
Go ahead, Tom.
I think it's always dangerous because I know where you're going with it. I think it's dangerous to pick and choose and pick out years and compare them to a guy to justify an off year or to say, well, this guy, you know, can do this or that. I just don't like doing that. I think you can kind of cherry pick and do that. And also, and Eli Manning's a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong. but when the Giants have won Super Bowl championships, not that he didn't have good runs in the playoffs, but wouldn't you say that it was that defensive line and that defense
no question.
That took over games?
Yeah. No question.
All day.
That's why I told JP you got to start with the defense. Yep.
All right, guys, let's get to it. The picks from last week are in.
Let's
Lagerman
see
and Baselli, both 11-4. I was 10-5.
Come on, Max.
Baselli, you were, at one point when I was tallying the scores, I think you were 11-0 at one point, and then the later games of the day didn't do so well. So for the season now, Baselli, a 617 win percentage. I'm at 588. Lagerman at 562.
And Tony, once again, there's the asterisk next to you.
It's not an asterisk. Yep. It's in parentheses,
it's
first of all.
It's the same daggum thing,
week
JP.
Four.
It says started picking
it's
in week
four. It's not an asterisk. Know your punctuation.
Well, if you had done it properly, it would have had an asterisk because that doesn't warrant parentheses because the parentheses
is
on the stats on the rest
he
of the graphic.
He didn't pick till week four.
So, therefore,
I just said
you just used the parentheses incorrectly.
Whatever.
It should have been used as an asterisk.
I didn't know they taught punctuation in Virginia.
JP is not happy because he is not beating you.
Well, I don't really care, and I'm just glad I'm not there to see it because it gets nauseating looking at his stupid graphic that is purposely set up to try to make him look better than he really is.
I got a question. I mean, and Tony, we got to get to the bottom of this because is JP building the graphics?
Yeah, I am.
Or is Hollywood building
the graphics?
No, I am. Graphics?
It is me.
Oh, it is you.
It is me. I've claimed this before. You know this.
I was just double checking.
I
want to make sure.
In previous shows
that
when I said I made the graphic that is crushing Baselli.
Sure,
yeah,
it's not Hollywood. Hollywood doesn't like JP.
Okay. Right. That's fair.
Okay. I'm glad we got that clarification. And Hollywood would have correctly used the asterisk instead of the parentheses.
Would he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's pick some games this week and move forward, shall we? The Giants at the Eagles. Who you got?
I'm taking the Eagles.
Are you really? I'm going Giants.
My man Joe, got to pick them. Got to pick
Tony.
Them.
Yeah, it's a coin flip up for me. I think it's going to be a real close game, but I'll go with the Giants.
Okay. Dolphins at the Bills.
I'm taking the Dolphins.
I'm going to go Dolphins. They still got a chance at the playoffs, and they're playing for something. And the Bills, they don't even know who their coach is going to be next week.
Yeah, I'm going Bills just because of that. I think Rex rallies the troops. Falcons at the Panthers.
Tony, go ahead. Y'all let
the Panthers played really bad. The Panthers played good last week,
good,
didn't they? They played really good football. But I think the Falcons with that offense, Julio Jones is going to be back. I think they'll get the win.
Go ahead, JP. Stop riding on our coattails.
Yeah, I didn't last time. I picked the Bills for goodness sake. Let me go with the Panthers.
Okay, I'm going to stay with Tony. I'm going to stay Falcons.
Okay,
now the next one you pick first.
Both going to lose. The Redskins at the Bears. I'm going with the Redskins, of course.
Ooh, I'm taking the Bears. Where's it at, Bears?
It's in Chicago.
You know where
I'm taking the Bears.
Yeah, you're going with the Skins, Tony. So you're going Bears, Logs?
Yeah, I'm going Bears. That's what I said, didn't I?
That's a bad pick.
No, it's not.
Chargers at the Browns.
Hey,
is this the week?
They got an SC quarterback for the Bears right now, right?
Sure.
Yeah, Matt Barkley's playing good.
Charles Barkley playing quarterback?
It's not Charles Barkley.
His little brother, Matt.
Chargers at
that
the Browns.
That would be funny, though.
Is this the week for Cleveland? No.
No.
I'm going Chargers.
Yeah.
Tony?
I'm going Browns.
Oh, he's going with them again. That's the second time you've done that, by the way, this year. Vikings at the Packers.
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 Yeah, all of us agree there. Jets.
Riding our coattails again.
Jets at the Patriots.
Come on, JP, pick the Jets.
No, come on. Patriots all day for me. You guys?
The Jets are playing pathetic.
Okay, Tony?
Well, come on. It's the
Patriots. Pack. Colts at the Raiders.
Raiders.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm going to go with the Colts.
On the road in the black hole. Tony going with the Colts. 49ers at the Rams. What a terrible game that is.
That is a bad game.
In L.A. Ugh.
That is
I'll tell you who the losers are.
15,000. The fans in L.A.
Fans.
The fans.
All 15,000 that show up.
Yeah, that's tough.
I'm going to go with the Niners just because they were close a couple weeks ago.
I'm going with the Rams. They play good defense.
I'm going to go with the 49ers.
Okay. Ride my coattails, Tony. Buccaneers at the Saints in the Dome.
Bucks.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tony.
No, I'm not buying that yet. I'm taking the Saints.
Okay, at home. Well, Drew Brees, he was good last week. Cardinals at the Seahawks. Easy for me. Seahawks.
Seahawks.
Bengals at Texans.
Ooh.
Mm.
Ooh.
Bengals for me.
I'm taking the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bengals, too. I think they. It's one thing to come off the bench and kind of go in there and not thinking much about it. It'll be interesting to see how Tom Savage does with a week of preparation and the Bengals having a week of preparation against him.
Yep. Hold on. You guys picked the Bengals, right?
Yeah.
I'm flipping my pick. I'm taking the Texans and Tom Savage.
Nice work.
I'm on the Tom Savage bus. I need a pick-me-up there, JP.
Good luck with that one. Christmas Day, the Ravens at the Steelers at 425 Eastern.
Good one.
Good game.
Great game. Great game, and I'm going Steelers.
I'm taking
Steelers? In Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah,
I just got
done
watching, by the way, last night the NFL Network does, Football Life?
Yes.
I recorded Chuck Knoll and me and Joe Green a long time ago. And me and my mom, Tara, sat down and we watched it last night. We watched them back-to-back. Chuck Knoll and then Mean Joe Green.
That'll get you fired up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man, you want to talk about good stuff. I can't help but pick the Pittsburgh Steelers now.
Okay. There you have it. So Christmas night, the Broncos at the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
Mm.
Broncos for me.
Chiefs.
And then Monday night, Lions-Cowboys in
Cowboys.
Dallas.
I'm going
Lions.
Ooh. Do you think Matt Stafford's got enough? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I like the Lions.
Wow, there you have it.
I don't know who that defensive end is for the Dallas Cowboys. What is it, Irving? Good football player now.
So there you have it. Picks are in. Jaguars, Titans. Tony, they get it done this week.
I sure hope so, JP.
I sure hope so, too.
I think we all hope so. Yep. Tony, have a great call tonight in Philadelphia.
All right.
Don't eat all the cheesesteaks, will you? Just lay off those.
All right. Sounds good. I'll see you guys Christmas Eve.
All right.
See you.
There he is. Thought he'd give me more on the cheesesteaks.
That's the best part about going to Philadelphia.
Oh, gosh.
What is it, Joe? Geno's?
Pat's and Geno's.
Pat.
There's Tony Luke's, too.
Jim's and Pat's? Jim's and Geno's.
Yeah. Geno's and Pat's are across the street. Tony Luke's is closer to the stadium, if I'm not mistaken. Jim's is pretty good, Joe says, Fortunato.
Best part is you go to one, and then you take a break, and then you go to the other.
And then there's the Italian food, too. We were talking about that earlier in here today, too. Oh, come on, Logs. Yeah. We've got
to
work on you.
You go to eat cheesesteaks in Philly. You know, I mean, they do have excellent Italian food places, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think I've ever eaten Italian in Philadelphia.
Well, you're missing out.
I can't.
They got a whole neighborhood.
I can't get past the cheesesteaks.
Well, you gotta move forward. You gotta fight through.
I grew up as a kid. Okay, I grew up as a kid. Next one, kid. Next time when we go, you've got to take me to an Italian place.
No problem.
Knock my socks off.
I will.
But as a kid, I grew up, and you know, I used to eat cheesesteaks all the time. And there were those steakums. You know what I mean? You know, the steakums, they were frozen pieces of meat.
That sounds awful.
But, I mean, as a kid, I was like, I mean, just like eating fried Spam sandwiches. Did you ever have a fried Spam sandwich as a kid?
Not often, but yeah.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean,
but that's a Spam sandwich. You're expecting a Spam sandwich. You want a cheesesteak.
You don't want a Spam sandwich. You want a cheesesteak.
You get a steakum.
No.
No, you don't.
No, you don't do that.
You just eat something else.
That's what we
and then go to Philadelphia.
You get steakums. Throw them in the pan. Throw some onions in there. Put the lid on. It goes from frozen to cooked in like 5 minutes. It's awesome.
That's great.
I don't even know if they still make
it. Is the refrigerator out on your front lawn?
No. That was one out the back door.
Let's come back and wrap this show up, shall we? Get the latest transportation news and information with the award-winning Making Moves. Watch the first Tuesday at 12:30 on Channel 4 and every Thursday after Nightline on ABC 25. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Titans 8-6, Jaguars 2-12 this Saturday at Everbank Field, Christmas Eve football. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars Thursday, Tony Baselli out of here. Thank you for joining us tonight. 2 hours, first hour on the network tonight. And the last hour here on 1010XL in Jacksonville, Jaguars.com, the Jaguars app as well this evening. So the Titans control their own destiny. The Jaguars have an interim head coach. Two total different ends of the spectrum.
Well, the Titans have one, too, that he just got his title changed from interim to head coach.
Yes.
Which is pretty unique. I mean, it's, you know, give John Robinson a lot of credit now. I mean, he could have just said, you know what, we're not going to do that. And, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why there a lot of people were saying, you know, how could you have let Gus Bradley have so many opportunities in 4 years? And look, in the National Football League, consistency has been proven to have a more positive impact than trying to change willy-nilly. And I think John Robinson understood that, you know, some consistency from the coaching position, even though from interim status to the head coaching status, it was going to pay dividends or could pay dividends in a quicker fashion than making wholesale changes once again.
Yeah.
You know, so give John Robinson some credit. And I'm going to tell you right now, the trades, plural, that John Robinson has been able to do can have the ability to make this Titans franchise just wealthy for years to come. I mean, think about what they were able to do this past year. I mean, the trade that they pulled off, and I don't know exactly how many picks that it garnered them.
A lot.
But it garnered a ton of picks. And here's the best part, okay? They already got a quarterback. And when you've already got a quarterback, okay, and you're able to trade, and I don't want to put it in the same ballpark as a Herschel Walker trade, but you know what? At some point in the future, it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it was that sizable of a trade with the Rams mm-hmm. to where they selected Jared Goff. And so, but what a great position to be in to where you selected your franchise guy in Marcus Mariota. And then the next year, you got the opportunity to pick, you know, one of two quarterbacks and – but you really don't need one because you've got confidence that Mariota is your guy.
Said shown some flashes, yes.
That might be the best position to be in, period, as a general manager, bar none.
It's all about that quarterback working out, man,
yeah.
In this league. That's how it goes.
It's been fantastic for them, you know, and John Robinson is going to have a lot of fun in the future. I mean, he's got a lot of picks. He's, you know, with that trade. You know, and I give him credit because, you know, he was able to do some things in the draft, maneuver around, get some really good players. You know, Conklin has been a very good player for them. Henry has been a good player for them. Second-round pick, Austin Johnson, the defensive lineman, defensive tackle, has been playing well for them. Last week, LaShawn Sims.
Rookie.
Yeah, fifth-round pick, cornerback, got his first career interception. He's been playing more.
He's from, like, Southern Utah or something.
That's exactly right, Southern Utah. Kevin – I want to make sure I say his name. Byard. It's actually Byard if you actually just looked at it and pronounced it, but it's Byard. He's a third-round pick safety that they've got who's kind of waiting in the wings to get in behind Rashad Johnson. I mean, they've done a very good job. And, you know, the receivers. I mean, they've got a rookie receiver playing right now, you know. So a young football team with many more picks to come. And, you know, if you're the Jaguars, you better get going, you know, because right now the Tennessee Titans, you could argue – are in the best shape of any team in the division.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Even for years to come. Yes, because if you don't catch up pretty soon, it could get away from you again.
Well, people point to people point to Andrew Luck. You know, and look, Andrew Luck is a fantastic young player.
He doesn't have that kind of group around him.
He does not.
No,
he does not have a young core of players around him. He's got some good talented wide receivers, but for the most part, his offensive line has not been great. Defensively for them, you know, they're kind of below run of the mill, you know. So Marcus Mariota is sitting very nicely in the catbird seat in the AFC South if you look at them from a personnel standpoint. And who would have thought? Who would have thought?
No, you're right. And Houston still has to figure out the quarterback situation for the future. I believe that's fair to say.
Yeah, and that's
they've got the defense.
That's what gives Tennessee the advantage. You know, Tennessee got the advantage because they've got a quarterback they feel great about. And I think he's a very good player. And then they've got a lot of picks in the future. And that's a great position to be in. I wish this team was in that position.
I was about to say the same thing. They are far from it right now. Without a full-time head coach.
They've got a ways to go.
A quarterback that struggled in his third year. And you know, they have some flashes, though, in certain areas where things have gone okay this year.
Well,
defensively, I mean,
two wins, JP, that's not a whole lot of flash.
That's right. That's not enough. So the Titans and the Jaguars coming up Sunday, 1 o'clock. or Saturday, the 1 o'clock kickoff time. By the way, since when did when games fall on a Sunday falls on Christmas or Christmas falls on Sunday? Don't the games aren't they normally played on Christmas Day? Or is this kind of rare?
No,
they always move them.
No, it's not. It's not about it being on Christmas. I mean, they would typically take some away from Christmas, but you still want to have some that will be national.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not unusual what the league has done.
Okay. Right.
You know, because, you know what, to be honest with you, there's probably more viewing on Christmas Eve than there is Christmas Day.
I can see that. Yeah.
So you move the majority of the games, and then you try to leave some sexy matchup on Christmas Day, which happens to be...
Yeah, Ravens-Steelers and Broncos-Chiefs. Pretty good matchups.
Sexy, right? Yeah. I mean, so there you go. So don't put a bunch of, you know, junk on Christmas Day. Move most of them on Christmas Eve. Put some really good matchups on Christmas Day.
Hey, wasn't there a time, maybe in the 90s, when toward the end of the season, the last couple of weeks, they play games on Saturday?
Yeah,
anyway.
They did, because the college, you know, the college stuff was already over.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I'm
saying.
Which
they did that the last couple of weeks.
It's not out of the ordinary, but I think the reason why they're more on Saturday as opposed to Sunday is Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, Merry Christmas to all our listeners.
Yes,
Merry Christmas to all.
We will talk to everybody Saturday, 10 o'clock at the Public Tailgate Show. I better be here.
Because if you're not here on Saturday,
I'll be somewhere else.
It means it's more Tony.
Then I'm going to make a new graphic.
Well done, Logs. We'll see you on Saturday. How about that? For Tony Buscelli, Jeff Logman, Max Hockman, Joe Fortunato, JP Shadrick. Thank you for listening to Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.